Hello, welcome to this very special members-only episode of ADAPT. We are celebrating Relay FM's anniversary, and as part of that, we have prepared a great discussion topic for you today. There's not going to be a challenge, no challenges here, but Federico and I are going to talk through our iPad home screens, and specifically our iPadOS home screens, because we've both been using iPadOS for a few months, and it comes with a couple of enhancements to the home screen. So we're going to talk through exactly what our home screen setup is. You can look in the show notes of the podcast player you're listening to right now to see the images of our home screens. But Federico, thank you for joining me. I am excited to dive in and you know, see what your iPad methodology based on your home screen.
Well, first of all, I should say that I am pleased to see that just like me, you only have three pages of apps on your iPad. I, you know, unlike my friend and colleague John Voorhees, who has a serious problem in terms of downloading apps and just accumulating digital, he's a digital hoarder, really. It's what it is.
Yes.
He can't help himself. He collects things. Files, images, documents, emails, icons, whatever it is. And I'm pleased to see that you also keep a tight structure. So I would like to compliment you on that.
Well, thank you. And actually, I had forgotten, but normally I only have two screens. There are some apps that bled over to the third screen and I forgot about them. So I need to get myself back in shipshape and back to two screens because that's where I'll be soon. But not to say anything against John. John, we still love you.
We can say things against John, and we can still love him at the same time.
Okay, well, then I guess that's fine. Let's do that then. So I noticed that you don't actually fill up your first row or the first screen. You've got a row that's empty. What is that about?
Well, so let me clarify up front. That to me is the last row, by the way. You call it the first because you start from the dock.
I misspoke there. I think it's the last row.
Okay.
Yeah.
It is empty because that row contains two icons for two secret projects that I've been working on. And the first of them should be revealed very soon. And the other one a little bit later. And it is going to be exclusive to Club Mac Stories members. The first one will be announced on Mac Stories very soon. In addition to the review, I've been working on a couple of secret things this summer, and I'm super excited about both of them. But I don't want to show you the icons yet because I would like it to be a surprise. And so those five icons, or six icons, are related to the surprises, plural, because there are two. And it's going to be fun. And all I'm going to say is that there's, you know, it's the kind of nerdy, you know, thing that you can expect from me. So it should be fun.
Yeah. Something that you learn when you are working with Federico is, let's say you know a little something about a secret project that he's working on. And maybe you see some tweets where he's teasing that project, or you hear him talk about it on a podcast, and you think, oh, yeah, I know exactly what he's talking about, only to find out that there are actually other secret projects that you don't know about yet that he later tells you about. And just a few minutes ago, actually, Federico was telling me about one of the two secret projects that I didn't know about. There's always more, Federico. There's always more.
And there's always more.
We love surprises. I think those who listen to ADAPT, those who read Mac Stories, we love surprises, and so that's great. But I'm astounded that there's always more surprises.
Well, to me, they are non-review related things are distractions, and so this summer I essentially played no video games. My only distraction was when I read Dark Age, which is the latest book in the Red Rising series, in 12 days in August. That was my only distraction this summer. I played no video games. I essentially listened to no podcasts, listened to no music except for music that is suitable for editing. which tends to be Italian rap music for some reason. It hits a different part of my brain that is not dedicated to editing English words. So no distractions. So what I did to not think about the review was set up and organize surprises for September. So that's what I did. I cannot wait to play a Nintendo Switch game again. But still, this is going to be fun. And I'm also, you know, I'm always working on something new and fun and different. And I've had real good fun with these two things. So that said, why don't we go row by row? And again, you're going to be able, you know, you're going to see chapter markers in the show with screenshots when Ryan and I are talking about on home screens. Why don't you go first, Ryan, and tell me about your first row at the top? Because I see quite an interesting combination of things that are seemingly not related to each other.
Well, that really hits on my, I guess, design ethos when it comes to my home screen, which is that I do like to have similar apps next to each other. But even more than I like that, I like to have similar colors next to each other. So the top row of the home screen, even though the colors don't fit perfectly together, it's kind of a, you know, variety of different apps that do different things. But there are some color similarities, which is why they are together. The top left is settings, because I just always like to have settings in the top left of my home screen. It's that way on both my iPad and my iPhone. It's the app that I need to access regularly, but not, you know, so regularly that I want it more accessible than being up in the corner. My next app is the TV app. Now, I know that you know this, Federico, and some people who read our work on Mac Stories may know this, but I am a little bit of the TV nerd in the Mac Stories team. One of my actually very first stories for Mac Stories was writing a review of the TV app when it first debuted a few years ago. And ever since then, I've kind of been the TV guy who is especially interested in and excited about anything that Apple does related to TV. And so I have actually used the TV app ever since it launched. I know, at least I suspect, that there aren't that many users out there who use the TV app. You know, I'm one of those people who likes to see what apps people have on their home screens if they are using their phone in front of me. And I will notice that the TV app is there, and I sometimes ask them, you know, oh, do you ever use that? And they're like, what? Oh, what is this? So people who maybe don't care so much about some of the pre-installed apps, but the TV app is one that I use regularly. I use it primarily on the Apple TV, so on tvOS. That's the main place that I watch TV. I will sometimes watch it on the iPad, though, but really the main reason why it's on my home screen, apart from the fact that I do sometimes watch content there, is that I like to browse it while I'm on my iPad to see what's new, you know, to check my up next queue, to see what new shows have come out that I will be able to then watch maybe later in the day on the Apple TV, or to search for different things, just to, you know, discover new content. I do that on my iPad because I am on my iPad all day, every day for work. So it seems like a logical place to go. So the TV app is there. The next app is called When Did I? This was a fairly recent discovery. The app launched not that long ago, actually. And it's a very simple app. It's essentially a list of things that you want to keep track of when you last did that thing. So, for example, I have set up a number of items for things like, when did I last get a haircut? When did I last change my contact lenses? When did I last replace the fire alarm battery? And so the app is just a really simple one screen that shows all of those different things that you're tracking and the last time that you did them. So you can, the next time you do one of those things, you can just tap on that item and it automatically logs that you did it and the timer resets. so that it shows, oh, you did that thing now 5 seconds ago since you just hit the button. You can also keep track of the history. So if you want to, you can scroll through the full history of when you did different things. But I've just found it's a really handy utility. It's the mm-hmm. kind of thing that, you know, you can track things like that in, say, a note or in a reminders list or a bunch of different ways. You don't need a dedicated app for it. But I found that having a dedicated app is really nice because I probably wouldn't go to the trouble. And I haven't historically gone to the trouble of writing down the last time that I, let's say, washed the sheets of the bed. But I typically will think to myself, hey, when did I do that thing? And I'll try to remember, and sometimes I'll remember and sometimes I won't. And this app really just removes all that mental strain and makes it really easy to see at a glance when I'd last did that thing.
That's very nice.
Yeah, it's an app that I've really been enjoying this year. Next up on the list is Ferrite. Ferrite Recording Studio is the app that I actually edit this very podcast in. So I wrote a story on Mac Stories not long ago. There will be a link to it in the show notes where I outlined my process for editing podcasts on the iPad using Ferrite. Ferrite is a great app. It has all kinds of different customization tools, ways that you can modify it to make it your own and to really meet your needs as a podcaster. And so I love the app. I use it with every episode that we record. And I highly recommend it to anyone who wants to podcast on the iPad.
Mm-hmm.
Next up is Maps. I don't use Maps a whole lot on my iPad. It's more kind of like I was talking about with the TV app. Because I'm on my iPad all the time, whenever I want to look up a different location, whenever I want to, you know, maybe figure out how long it's going to take me to get somewhere, I will open Maps on my iPad. And it's nice to have the big map on the big screen versus, you know, not being able to see as much on the iPhone. It's probably one of my least used home screen apps, but I still like to keep it there. And then Numbers rounds out my top row. I use Numbers for just a couple of things. I have a budget in there. I have a spreadsheet that kind of keeps track of a creative writing project that I am working on off and on. And I've kind of got a spreadsheet to outline different things related to that. So I don't use a whole lot. Honestly, it's probably the first app that will get bumped from the home screen if there's another app I want to put there. But I keep it there. It's green, so it's next to Maps, and it works out well. It makes me happy. So that is my top row.
All right. So as you can see from my home screen, I do try to organize things by type and category. And my top row, historically, it has always been my media row. I'm not sure when this started, but it's the same on my iPhone. And on the iPad, I keep more options because I have the space for them. So you will see App Store and Music. App Store has always been in the top left corner on all of my devices for, well, not always, but really for a long time at this point. And I keep Apple Music because I subscribe to Apple Music. We have a family subscription. It's what we use. It's what I use to discover new music. I use it every day. And especially now that it's got real-time synced lyrics in iOS 13, I love that feature. And I really can't believe that Apple is doing it. That used to be one of my dreams of the ideal music streaming service, to have karaoke-like lyrics, and that is now supported in Apple Music. So that's also excellent. You will notice Prism, which also has a play icon. That is also a music app, but for something different. So Prism is a Plex client. So Plex is the popular media server software that lets you organize a library of media files on your computer. Movies, TV shows, music, photos. And you can expose that library as a server to Plex. And so you can access the media stored on your computer using the native Plex apps for all platforms. Essentially, there's Plex for tvOS, iPhone, iPad. There's Plex for Android. There's Plex for Windows. There's Plex everywhere. And Prism is a third-party client for Plex. So it gets access to your Plex library, and it's optimized for music consumption. So what sets it apart is that it's got a better visualization of music when it comes to browsing your library on an iPhone and iPad compared to what the official Plex app offers on iOS. And the best thing about Prism is that it works with all the formats that you can store in Plex. And at this point, you may wonder, why do you keep a separate music library if you use Apple Music? That's because in addition to streaming music, I also listen to music in a more relaxed environment, and I guess in a more specific environment with a Hi-Res Sony Walkman. It's a Hi-Res music player that I combined with expensive but amazing Sony headphones. They're called the Sony MDR-Z1R. They are over-ear headphones. Very fancy, but amazing sound. And I listen to music this way when I want to really just enjoy the music and think about nothing else. So I keep a smaller curated library of music that I actually buy online in digital format, and I organize with Plex. And when I want to listen to that library from my iOS devices, it doesn't really happen often because, like I mentioned, I have a Sony Walkman player that I carry with me when I travel. But if it does happen, I can access my Plex library from Prism, and it's got better filters for filtering artists and interacting via 3D touch and long presses. It's really well done. It's different from any other music app I've tried. It remembers the state of your filters and views when you go back to the app. It's really nicely done. It's also on the iPad. Next up is YouTube. I'm a YouTube premium subscriber. I haven't seen YouTube ads in years at this point, and I use the YouTube app a lot when it comes to watching music videos, watching videos from my favorite channels like MKBHD and a couple of, for example, the Digital Foundry video game channel for Eurogamer. I have a couple, you know, Kotaku is also running an excellent channel on YouTube, thanks to Tim Rogers. So, you know, the folks at Kotaku, if you care about video games, they really do an excellent job on YouTube. I download my videos offline, and I'm really happy with YouTube Premium. Apple Podcasts is there instead of Overcast because I've been using podcasts this summer to test iOS 13. And like I mentioned, I've listened to no shows, or I should actually say very few shows, very few. I think maybe a couple of Cortex episodes. And I'm catching up on app stories now because I gotta listen to my own show. I haven't seen any particular problems that make me miss Overcast right now. I do enjoy the fact that podcasts has a full integration with Shortcuts now. I don't know if I will stick to this, so do not be surprised if in the near future the Overcast icon is back in there. But I do like the fact that podcasts, in addition to the Shortcuts actions with parameters, is also integrated with Siri natively and supports AirPlay 2, which Overcast doesn't. So you can stream your AirPlay 2, and you can create independent streams for the podcasts app on other speakers. It's really nicely done. And finally, Apple News. I'm a News Plus subscriber. I don't use it a lot, but I do read articles in Edge magazine and other video game magazines like Retro Gamer occasionally. I should use it more. Again, my main problem is that this summer I really didn't have enough time for media consumption, except for reading a single book. So I expect to go back to using Apple News more, because I actually quite like using Apple News and Apple News Plus. I think it's got a lot of problems, but for what I needed to do, it's fine. It does the job sufficiently well.
All right, so my second row starts out with a couple of apps that fit the two things that I like, which is apps that have similar colored icons and apps that are in a similar category. So I've got Tweetbot and Apollo to start off the row.
Tweetbot, both
what I would call social media apps. Now, if you look down at the bottom of the screenshot, you'll see that Twitter, the first-party Twitter app, is in my dock.
What's going on? Are you keeping a secret account?
I don't have a secret account, but in Tweetbot, I am logged into the Adapt Twitter account. I used to have both my personal account and the Adapt account inside of the first party Twitter app, but I have found that I prefer keeping them separate. I just like to, you know, let's say a notification comes in from the Twitter app. I like to know right off the bat that this is a notification directed toward my personal account rather than one for Adapt. Because when I was using both in the same app, it would sometimes be confusing. You know, am I replying to this tweet from the Adapt account or from my personal account? And just to remove any possibility of, you know, getting confused or sending a tweet from the wrong account, I keep them separate. So Tweetbot is what I use for the Adapt account. I also love Apollo. I'm not a huge Reddit user. I don't think I've ever posted on Reddit, but I like browsing different subreddits, and Apollo is easily my favorite app to do that in. I think Apollo is extremely well designed. It's not as great of an iPad app as it is an iPhone app. I know that the developer is working on that. There is an iPad update that's in the works where I think he's planning to make some changes. So I'm excited about that. But despite the fact that it's not as ideal on the iPad, it's still a great app. And so I use Apollo for Reddit. And then the next two apps are for reading. So Kindle and Apple Books. I do as much reading as possible in Apple Books. I love Apple Books. I wrote an article about it last year. I'm really happy with how Apple kind of rebirthed iBooks into an app that feels very, very in touch with and aware of the things that people who love literature like in design. You know, it was the first app that used the serif version of San Francisco, which I believe is now called New York. Is that right, Federico?
Yes, it's called New York. And as a, you know, interesting aside, I guess, it is now also available to developers to use in their apps in iOS 13 and iPadOS 13. Developers can now access the monospace version of San Francisco and San Francisco Pro and Apple New York. So all of the fonts, and also San Francisco Rounded, of course. All of the fonts, including the serif New York, can be available to apps. So it's not exclusive to books anymore.
Well, that's great news. I hope to see some of my favorite apps add support for those fonts, because that would be great. But anyways, I have Kindle there, even though I prefer Apple Books, simply because Apple's library on their store of available books is not as wide as what's available for Kindle. And so occasionally I run into a book that I want to read that isn't available on the Apple Bookstore, and so I have to get it for Kindle, which is why that app is there. Pages, I don't use a whole lot at the moment. I've used it more in the past. I do like the app. I certainly prefer it over something like Microsoft Word or Google Docs even, but at the moment, I don't have as many uses for it. I haven't moved it off the home screen, but I might at some point. And then Carrot Weather, which is my favorite weather app. It recently received a great iPad update, which added some new functionality, and it's just a great app. I love the fact that it has such personality and that you can customize it to really serve you the weather the way that you want it, whether it's through notifications, through a widget. You know, you can customize the UI to show different data points that you care most about. It's just a great overall app, and it's updated regularly with meaningful improvements. So easily my favorite weather app.
Yeah, it's really good. I especially love the fact that, you know, all the custom icons and all the customization for the level of snarkiness is also something that I would like Apple to add to Siri. Sometimes Siri says things in a way that I don't really need the sass or the comments from Siri. And, you know, I would very much welcome a slider that lets me choose how talkative should Siri be to you. I would be like, talk as little as possible. Just give me the information or do the things. Anyway, second row, Apple Mail. We talked about this on App Stories, John and I. I've gone back to Apple Mail. It started as a way, of course, to test iOS 13. And then I realized that I actually liked it because my life is different now to the point where I don't need push notifications on all the time for email. In fact, my life is actually better now that I don't get notifications for messages as soon as they arrive. I still keep Spark on my devices to share the occasional message and comment with you guys for the Mac Stories team. But otherwise, for personal use, Mail is polished. The UI is elegant and fluid, and the scrolling through messages is super smooth, and I love it. It's integrated with multi-window, multitasking, supports drag and drop as a new integration in iOS 13 to create reminders that are deep linked to email messages. All of these exclusive features are only available for Apple Mail. It's also got a new shortcuts action that supports parameters. So you can send emails and customize different fields from shortcuts. You can even create drafts for email messages in shortcuts now. So all of this only happens with Apple Mail. And you know, despite all the fun and jokes that people say about Apple Mail, it does its job well, and it's a great iOS citizen. Even though it's not perfect, but it's gotten better over the years. Calendar, same reasons. I realized I don't need anything more complicated than a grid view. But because of multi-window, what I now do on iPadOS is I keep a permanent workspace of two calendar windows. One shows me the month view, the other shows me the week view. And now when I tap on the calendar icon, I'm always taken to a space that shows me the month and the week. And that's perfect because it's all I want. I want to get an overview of my current month, and I want to get an overview of what's coming up in the next few days. And calendar is perfect for that. Lookup is my favorite dictionary app. I've been using Lookup for a couple of years. I've assembled a series of collections. Collections are folders for specific words that you discover when reading or when listening to music. Lookup lets you, look up the definition of a word, but you can also get synonyms. You can get the meaning, you can get the origin, you can get similar words, you can get rhyming words, which is fun. But now in iOS 13, in addition to multi-window and context menus and dark mode, the Lookup developers listened to an idea that I shared, I think a couple of years ago or last year, on Connected. A dream of mine has always been the following. As a non-native English speaker, when I discover words and I save them, saving them is not enough to remember them. And I always wanted my dictionary app to offer some kind of quiz mode that would quiz me on the meaning of words that I saved in my collections so that I could remember them over time. And I used to do this by using my girlfriend as the presenter of this little game show. She would run through the list of words in my collections and ask me what they meant. And now there's a quiz mode, a game mode built into Lookup version 6, which is coming up soon. It's amazing. You can select any collection and then you can start playing a game. And the app will ask you things like, what is the word that means? And there's going to be a definition, or what is an adjective or a noun? It's really well done, and you get trophies at the end, and then you can see all of the trophies that you got. And if the app recognizes that you consistently get a specific word wrong, that's going to offer a suggestion for you the next time you play. It's incredible that the Lookup developers have built this feature. It is going straight to the top of my list of best features of 2019 in terms of apps. I cannot believe that this is possible. It was really a little dream of mine when it comes to apps that I use. And now, because of this, I'm going to be learning a lot of new words in a much better way. Reader, as my RSS client, I use RSS to read my favorite websites. I've been using Feedbin lately instead of Ino Reader as my RSS service because I wanted to check out NetNewsWire on the Mac. John did a review of NetNewsWire version 5 on Mac stories. And Feedbin is fun. It's fast. It's got an open API. And for that reason, I've also been experimenting with shortcuts for the Feedbin API. Apollo, for all the reasons that you mentioned, I don't use Reddit much, but when I do, it is through Apollo. My favorite feature of Apollo is that it lets me filter subreddits by keyword. And so when I visit, for example, the iOS beta subreddit during the summer, I have filters going on for bugs, feature requests, and ideas, because I don't care about other people's ideas and because I don't care about other people's bugs. I just want to see what's new. And so it makes the iOS beta subreddit tolerable because it just shows me screenshots of new features that people share. That's one of the many delightful touches in Apollo. And Twitter, well, because it's, we talked about this, or I talked about this on Connected. I went back to Twitter as my only Twitter app months ago, initially adjusting, you know, coming down from the Tweetbot high was really difficult for me. I had been using Tweetbot for 6 years, maybe even more. And so it took me a while to adjust, but I use Twitter less now, which was part of the goal, because I kicked my timeline completionist habit successfully. Now I don't feel compelled to catching up on every single tweet in my timeline all day long. This has been instrumental to letting me focus on writing the iOS review this summer. But when I do open the Twitter app, I see all the modern features of the Twitter experience, polls, multiple images, the ability to add images and quoted tweets to the same tweet, search that searches through the entire archive of tweets. I've built my own custom saved search. I wrote about this on Mac Stories to see a custom mentions timeline for people that mention me. It's not as good as Tweetbot when it comes to the iPad version, for example, but also many of the advantages that made Tweetbot unique in the first place are now gone because of Twitter API restrictions that were introduced last year. So I don't need to use Twitter all day long like 5 years ago or 6 years ago. And for that, the Twitter app is totally fine. And also it's got the algorithmic home timeline, which is perfect when you haven't opened Twitter in like 2 days and you want to see what's new. And other clients don't have that feature. So it's all good for me.
My third row starts out with Luna Display. This is the companion app for the hardware that you can purchase. Luna Display plugs into a Mac, and it enables you to use an iPad as a display for that Mac. So I purchased a Mac Mini earlier this year, and I actually don't even have a monitor that I use with it. I solely use my iPad as the display for that Mac. And so right now, for example, as we're recording, I am recording technically through the Mac, but I'm interacting with my Mac solely through my iPad. So I see in the Luna Display app, which I have open right now, I'm looking at my Mac desktop with the different apps that I have open as we're recording. And then I also have a slide over window with notes, which shows me our show notes for this episode. So Luna Display is great. I've really appreciated the ability to use my iPad in place of a monitor. As part of the initial setup, I had to plug in my Mac Mini to my TV to kind of do some of that to get it set up. But now that it's set up and running well, Luna Display is great. The next app is Bible Memory. I use that to memorize different parts of the Bible. Then I use Apple News just like you. I have used Apple News ever since it launched. I really love it. I know it sometimes gets a bad rap, but for me, it is much more pleasant to read something in Apple News than it is to read it on the web most of the time through a browser. There's some websites that are fine, but lots of websites are just completely riddled with ads, and Apple News provides a cleaner look and just a better experience overall. I use Pixelmator This is the original Pixelmator app. There's also an app which I noticed is on your home screen called Pixelmator Photo, which debuted more recently. I use the original Pixelmator more than Pixelmator Photo, even though I do have both apps, because Pixelmator enables me to not just edit existing images, but really create images. So I can create a new image that's, you know, has certain dimensions. I can add different maybe screenshots that I have or different images into that new image in Pixelmator. It's a lot better for just creating something new rather than editing something that already exists, which is more where Pixelmator Photo specializes. So I still use Pixelmator all the time and love it. The iTunes Store is kind of an odd one to have on my home screen. I use it to check primarily just sales that Apple runs for things like TV shows or movies.
Do you also buy those?
I do, depending on the sale.
Yeah.
So in the last year or two, I have purchased the complete series of The Office, Parks and Recreation. I have seasons of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Superstore, some of my wife and I's favorite comedies, which we have rewatched and will continue to rewatch, I expect, in the future, because they're just so great. I have the complete series of The West Wing and The Newsroom, a couple other favorite shows. And so I've bought those at discounted rates through the iTunes Store. And so I do check once, maybe twice a week to see if there's different sales, but that's pretty much the only time I access that app. Mm-hmm. And then the last one is Timery, which is a time tracking app that integrates with Toggle. I use that to do all my time tracking for if I'm, you know, writing things for Mac Stories or Club Mac Stories. I don't track all my time for all the different things that I do in my life. It's primarily just for Mac Stories related work, but Timery is the best way to do that on iOS.
Moving on to my next row, it's 4 out of 6 are Apple apps. So we have settings. I keep settings there because I need to be able, especially in the summer, I need to be able to check what's changed and new options and stuff like that. Books, you turn me into an Apple Books fan, Ryan. Since I read your overview last year, I decided that I was going to read more in 2019. That was one of my New Year's resolutions, and I committed to that by reading 6 books so far, and it almost really happened accidentally. And now 6 books may not be a lot, but keep in mind that I hadn't read a book in like 6 years or 5 years. Like, I stopped reading years ago because I used to say I only read articles on the web now, but I really rediscovered the pleasure of reading a good book thanks to Apple Books. And almost incidentally, I came across the Red Rising series earlier this year, and so I've been reading all of that in Apple Books. And now Apple Books in iOS 13 is gaining a new reading goals feature that lets you keep track of how much time you spend reading every day and how many books you read in a year. It's really fun. Home. We keep a lot of HomeKit devices in our house. We have a security system built on top of HomeKit. Despite the fact that I do not like the Home app, and especially the new accessory grouping feature that Apple has enabled by default in the iOS 13 beta, and I guess it's going to ship in the public version of iOS 13, I need to keep it there to manage my scenes and my automations, which can now be powered by shortcuts, because you can have shortcuts actions inside HomeKit automations, which is wild. So I keep it there for that reason. Carrot Weather came back because of the iPad layout that was added a while back, multi-window in the iOS 13 beta, and support for shortcuts with parameters. So Carrot continues to really push the boundaries of what should be expected from a weather app by adopting all of the modern iOS technologies. Find My is there for no exact reason other than I needed to fill a spot and I needed to test the app for the iOS review. It's probably going away soon, I think. And Pixelmator Photo, also there because one of my goals was to start taking more pictures and edit them, but I turns out I don't really do that often. So it's there because I left it, but I don't think it'll stick. I expect to have a shakeup in terms of home screen organization after September. Probably going to spend the last couple of weeks of September to really rethink my home screen and you know, my shortcuts and all of that. And these two apps, Find My and Pixelmator Photo, I'm really not happy with.
My fourth row is...
This is the shame
all Google
row.
Apps. This is the Google row. This is the row that I wish didn't exist.
What is going on here?
I'm not going to talk about it much. I will just say that... So YouTube is YouTube. That's fine. It's videos. It's great.
And Gmail is Gmail.
Well, I don't even like the Gmail app because it doesn't support split view.
It's been what? 4 years?
Yeah. So I have to use these Google apps. And I wish that I didn't, but I do. And so they're there. That's all I'm going to say. I'm going to go ahead and talk about my last row because your fourth row is your last row. Since I don't want to go into detail, I don't want to go into a rant about Google stuff. Apple Music. I use Apple Music. I've used it since it launched. I enjoy it. Not a lot to say about that. I don't listen to music as much on my iPad. It's more on my iPhone. But since I'm on my iPad all day, if I want to... you know, see what's new, maybe see what Apple's editors are recommending, or just search for a particular song that I heard about on Twitter, then I will do that in the music app on my iPad. Shortcuts is right there. And I use Shortcuts regularly, although I don't open the Shortcuts app as much. I typically will interact with Shortcuts by using them through the share sheet. And I don't build as many Shortcuts myself. Thankfully, I work with you, and I benefit from the Shortcuts that you build.
Oh, so this is how it works. Okay.
Uh-huh. And TestFlight, I am in TestFlight all the time, especially this time of year. There are so many betas for iOS 13 updates that are coming soon. But even during the rest of the year, there's always a lot of betas, and so I am in TestFlight many times each day. Trello. We at Mac Stories use Trello to keep track of Club Mac Stories issues that we release for our newsletters and to keep track of different assignments for stories that are going on week to week. We were just talking about our assignments for the September event next week. And so Trello keeps track of all that for us. I do use Spark for my Mac Stories email. Like you mentioned earlier, Spark has some special features for Teams that allow you to share emails, not forward them, share them, and comment on them. It's a really great set of features for Teams. And so I use Spark exclusively for my Mac Stories email. And then the last app in the bottom right is Logos Bible, which is a Bible reading app that I use. And that rounds out my home screen aside from my dock. But tell me a little bit about your fourth row.
TestFlight, because I need to install as many betas as possible, especially during the summer when developers start making new apps or releasing app updates for the next version of iOS. Codex is my code editor of choice. I use it to edit JSON files, HTML, CSS, whenever I need to edit those types of documents. I like to use Codex. Two reasons. One, you can send via the share sheet using the copy to Codex standard function. You can send any document you want to Codex. Otherwise, you can just pick a document from the file picker that's built into Codex, and it'll open the file in place. So it will not create a duplicate copy. It'll open the file in place. And when you make edits and you save the file back, it'll be saved in the original location with your modifications. No need to save and export a manual copy. PDF Viewer, also my favorite PDF annotation app because, like Codex, it integrates with files. In this case, PDF Viewer uses the document browser as its default view so that when you open the app, you will see your iCloud Drive or any other file provider extension. You will be able to pick any document, any folder, and enter editing mode. So that's something that I really like about PDF Viewer, aside from the fact that the PS PDF Kit team continuously updates the app with new and modern iOS technologies, and that is something that I value in the software that I use all the time. Working Copy, I talked about this app extensively before. I wrote about it in May in my Beyond Tablet story. It is what we use at Mac Stories to collaborate for our shared repositories, to collaborate on Markdown articles. It is what I use to back up my own drafts for articles using IA Writer's integration via files. Again, you can go check out the extensive write-up about my workflow with Working Copy from the article back in May. Shellfish, the full name would be Secure Shellfish. It is an app that you, Ryan, reviewed. It is made by Anders Borum, is the same developer of Working Copy. This one is an FTP and SSH client that lets you access remote servers from the Files app. And starting with iOS 13, Shellfish has some incredible shortcuts that are compatible with parameters. You will be able to upload files, download them, list the contents of a remote directory entirely within shortcuts. And Shellfish, it is behind one of the surprises that I've been working on. So more details will be revealed in the near future. And finally, the WWDC app is there for obvious reasons. I needed to watch sessions and double-check information that Apple shared at WWDC with developers, even though my review this year, I think, I hope, doesn't have as much technical information as in previous years. I still needed to make sure that my basic knowledge was correct. And for that reason, the WWDC app has a spot there.
All right, so we've covered our main home screens. Do you want to move on to our docs, or should we talk about widgets first?
Let's go through the widgets quickly, and then we should also do some highlights from the doc, because I mean, I don't want to ask you why you have Safari or Files, but there's a few things that I want to ask you. But sure, describe your widget setup first, Ryan.
Okay, so I have 4 pinned widgets on my home screen. They are all in the compact mode, so they don't take up as much screen space, which is why I can fit 4 of them on there. And they are the Up Next widget, which I've talked about in a previous episode of Adapt, so I won't talk about that again. Timery, which I mentioned, you can start timers there and see how long a timer's been running. The remaining 2 have a little bit more of a story to them. So World Clock, which is from an app called World Clock Widget. I used to use an app called Cowzones by developer David Smith, and I probably will use it again. I really like that app. It currently has not updated yet through a beta to support light and dark modes. And so probably once it does that, I'll go back to Cowzones. But World Clock Widget is just a really simple way to keep track of what time it is in different parts of the world. I really like how simple and elegant the design is. That's one thing that is especially important to me when it comes to selecting pinned home screen widgets, is if there's a widget that just has a whole lot going on, I don't really want it on my home screen because I don't want to look at it all day. And so things that look especially nice and are clean and relatively simple, I found that those are better pinned widgets for me. So World Clock Widget, and then Weather, which really, I have it there for the exact reason I just described, which is that even though Carrot Weather is my primary weather app, and I will use that app regularly on the iPad, the Carrot Weather widget, you can customize it to include more or less information, but I found that it just isn't as aesthetically pleasing to look at throughout the day, and so I use Apple's weather widget instead. It's very clean, very simple, very stripped down, and so that's what I keep there on my home screen.
Very nice. I only keep 2 widgets, Shortcuts and Timery, and the Shortcuts one is the tallest one. I use it all the time. You will see Shortcuts like Work and Home and Review, Playlists, Utilities. All of those are menus that open additional lists of other shortcuts that I may want to run. This is a just a way that I like to get work done, to pop in and out of shortcuts, to run automations from the widgets page on iPadOS, which is for me an excellent way to save time, to have it be there without the additional swipe that was required before. So now all of my most used shortcuts are always available right there. And the timery is usually below that in compact mode. I'm not sure why it was expanded in this screenshot, but I just need to be able to see my current timer, if any is running, or my two topmost timers that I change those topmost timer shortcuts during the year, depending on which projects I'm working on. So for example, you can make out the fact that the review writing and review editing timers are at the very top, because that's what I'm working on at the moment. So with just these two shortcuts, I'm really happy with. Sorry, two widgets, not shortcuts, but most of them are shortcuts.
All right, so what questions do you have for me about my dock?
Well, I want to know why you're still using Morning Reader, even though last time I checked, that app hadn't been updated in, like, I don't know, 2 years. And I also would like to know your text editor situation. Because okay. I see Ulysses in there.
Yes. So Morning Reader is an app that I love. And it's almost silly how much I love it. This is a very simple app that there's a few different screens you can access. There's only one screen I ever access personally. It pulls in different tech-related headlines for articles that are grouped into two categories. There's 5 articles that are under the top stories category. And then if you scroll down, there's 5 articles that are under the recent category. And so I open Morning Reader all throughout the day on my phone and my iPad to just get a super quick glance at what's going on in Apple/tech news. If you tap on one of the articles, it opens it in Safari. But it's a super simple app. But if it went away at some point, which I hope it doesn't, it has been updated for the iPhone 10 design. It could stand to be updated more regularly, but I just love the app. It does something that no other app that I know of can do in just providing this really simple but valuable utility. So Morning Reader's great. As far as text editors go, you'll notice there's a few different apps that are text editors, or at least could be used as text editors. Ulysses is my full-time go-to writing app for things that I'm going to publish on Mac Stories. So everything that's written for Mac Stories or for Club Mac Stories is done in Ulysses. I love the app. I've written about it a bunch on Mac Stories. If Ulysses ever goes away, I'd be very sad. But I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon, so that's good. I also have Apple Notes right next to it, which I use more for notes, not so much for, you know, writing articles or things like that. I have a ton of notes in Apple Notes, as I've mentioned on this podcast in the past. And then there's Pretext, which is sitting in between Reminders and Calendar. I use Pretext to edit articles from you or John, or maybe an article that I have saved into a shared Git repo, which can be pulled in through Working Copy. Pretext is just a very simple Markdown editor that integrates with the Files document browser. So when you first open the app, you see the Files document browser, which is essentially the full Files interface, complete with all the file providers that you have configured, such as iCloud Drive, Google Drive, Dropbox. Working Copy is another file provider. And so I use Pretext primarily just to open articles that you have saved on GitHub or John has saved that I'm going to open so that I can edit them. You can do this technically through Ulysses, but Ulysses, because it has some very particular ways that it formats certain types of content, it's not great for editing existing articles. Pretext is the way that I prefer to do that, because it doesn't mess up any formatting. It's just a very simple stripped down markdown. Mm-hmm. And it works well. It does what it does. It does what I need it to do well. So that's my text editor situation. Does that make sense? Does that seem like overkill?
No, it doesn't make sense. I get it. I used to use Ulysses, and then I discovered IA Writer and file bookmarks, and just went, you know, I went down the rabbit hole. I had custom templates commissioned for IA Writer to resemble Mac stories and my iOS review layouts. And I'm still using IA Writer. I have a custom compile structure to compile different versions of my stories, one for the site, one for EPUB, one for my editing purposes. So IA Writer, I cannot wait for the developers to add multi-window and shortcuts. During the beta season this year, I used Drafts to write half of the iOS and iPadOS review. And something that I loved about Drafts was that it offered shortcuts with parameters to be able to get text from Drafts within shortcuts without having to open Drafts at all. And so I created shortcuts that would back up the contents of a Drafts workspace directly from shortcuts to multiple places like iCloud Drive and Dropbox. And that was lovely. And I could not wait for all text editors to support similar shortcuts. In my doc, I guess, I mean, besides the obvious things, Safari, Messages, Photos, Slack, because we use it on Mac, Stories, Notes, which is my only note-taking app these days, and shortcuts, you will also, let's see, Reminders, I'm going all in. It is my default task manager now. I used to use GoodTask, which was also a Reminders client, but some of the new Reminders features in iOS 13 are exclusive to Reminders. So natural language input and image attachments and subtasks. All of that is exclusive to Reminders this year. Scriptable, because increasingly I'm using JavaScript scripts to sort of complement things that shortcuts cannot do. Like, for example, saving files into directories that are located outside of iCloud Drive / shortcuts. Scriptable can save images into a subdirectory of the IA Writer folder. And also, I described this back in May. I use this to have local image references for my articles in IA Writer. MindNode is where I created the entire mind map for the iOS and iPadOS review. It is massive. I should send you a video, Ryan, of me scrolling the mind map in MindNode. It is something, really. And in iOS 13, the MindNode developers are working on multi-window, and this is very interesting, an API that I've only seen a handful of developers support, full page capture. So you know how in iOS 13, if you take a screenshot of Safari or Mail, for example, you will be able to choose from the markup UI, whether you want to save the screenshot as an image or capture the full page. So you can capture a full web page or a full email message as a PDF document. And this API is open to developers, and MindNode is adding full page capture support to let you capture the entire map instead of just what's currently shown on screen. So that's pretty cool. And lastly, Timery, for all the reasons that you mentioned, it's the time tracking app that I prefer because it supports shortcuts and customizations and all that kind of stuff. And there's a folder, and you can, if you squint, you will see Yoink, which is sort of a shelf that I use for random bits of text and files. 1Password, File Explorer Pro, which is a proper FTP and SFTP app that I use to access my remote servers. Dropbox, Airtable. Airtable I use to keep a list of workflows, or I should say shortcuts, that I create for the workflow corner section of our newsletter, Mac Stories Weekly. There's an additional Slack app. This is a tip that I picked up from CGP Grey on Cortex. if you download the, if you also like me, hate switching between Slack organizations in the Slack app, you can download the Slack Enterprise app on the App Store. It's a separate app built for organizations. It's called Slack EMM, but it's the same Slack experience than the traditional Slack app. It's also updated a few days later compared to the normal Slack app. So if Slack gets a feature on Monday, Slack EMM gets it on Thursday, for example, for some reason. I don't know. But that allows me to stay logged into the Relay FM Slack, whereas the main Slack app is permanently logged into Mac Stories. So by, you know, when I want to open Relay, I open that Slack app. When I want to open Mac Stories, I open the main one. That's about it. Blink. I just want to mention Blink. In the folder, you will see the Blink icon. That is the now defunct app by our friend John Voorhees. But I still use it to add links to apps and iTunes content to my articles, because I think it's a faster way to search the App Store and the iTunes Store than the actual App Store itself.
Okay, so before we wrap up, I have one comment and then two quick questions. The comment is, I actually, until very recently, had a folder in my doc as well because of a conversation you and I previously had on this very podcast. I had mentioned how I didn't like having a folder in my doc because when you were dragging an app out of that folder to, let's say, enter a split view or to put it in slide over, you would then have to also tap the screen to dismiss the folder. And I didn't like that extra step, and so I just went away from using folders. And I hadn't tried it since the iOS 11 beta cycle, when Apple first introduced drag and drop and, you know, multitasking via drag and drop. So I hadn't tried it since then, and you told me that, oh no, you don't have to tap to dismiss it. The folder will automatically dismiss. And that was true for a while until very recently. So yes. I was using a folder in my dock, and basically, if you look at my home screen as it is now, the bottom row of apps, starting with music, that row was in a folder in my dock for the last couple months, ever since we had that discussion on Adapt. But because of bugs in iPadOS, the beta, it is now gone back to the behavior where you do have to do that extra tap to dismiss the folder. I hope that'll be fixed. But because of that, I no longer use a folder in my dock again. So I thought that was a little funny that, you know, I learned after 2 years that it didn't work that way anymore and that it was fixed. And then shortly after I learned it, the problem came back up. Oh, well, two quick questions. First of all, why do you only have 14 apps in your dock rather than the max of 15?
Because I don't know what to add yet.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, you could take one of those foldered apps and put it in your dock.
Well, no, actually, let me rephrase. I didn't know what to add, and then I added a thing related to the surprises.
Oh, I see. So you had to take that out for this episode.
Yes, there's an icon on the right side of the Shortcuts app.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. I was about to say, how on earth can you live without maxing your dock?
It is maxed out right now.
Okay. All right. Second question is, in iPadOS, you can access quick actions by long pressing on app icons, just like you've always been able to do on 3D Touch iPhones. Mm-hmm. Now that functionality has been brought to the iPad. And so I was just curious, do you find yourself using quick actions on your iPad home screen? And if so, which apps do you use them for?
I use them for a couple of apps. Reminders to switch between lists more quickly, and Lookup to see my previously searched definitions. And I think Apollo to jump into subreddits. That's pretty much all I do. I think I don't really, and maybe it's an issue of just getting used to having quick actions on the iPad that I'm just not used to them. One thing I'm considering is adding some scripts as quick actions for the scriptable app, because that's something that you can customize in settings. But otherwise, I still haven't gotten used to the idea of pressing as much as I do on my phone that has 3D touch and has had 3D touch for a long time.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I haven't gotten used to it, and so I never think to do it. I think that there are a number of apps on my home screen that I would appreciate using those quick actions for. I just never think that that's a thing. It's new, and honestly, I think there is something different about the iPad versus the iPhone, where the iPhone, you hold it in your hand and your thumb is right there ready to, you know, long press or 3D touch on an icon. Whereas on the iPad, it's, you know, your hand's usually not right there on the screen already. Mm-hmm. So it takes a little more work, a little more intentionality, but that is something that I want to kind of train myself to do and to remember, because I think it would make the home screen more useful overall. All right, well, that has been this very special members episode of Adapt. Hope you've enjoyed our discussion of our home screens. We just want to say a very special thank you to you for your support. You being a Relay FM member means a lot to us. It means a lot, I'm sure, to the other great podcasts on this network, but we especially appreciate you so much, and we are privileged to get to do this every couple weeks and put out a podcast that we enjoy on a subject that we enjoy. And so we're grateful to have you as listeners, and especially to have you as supporters.